Welcome to Central Study Hour and happy Sabbath from Sacramento Central Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's a pleasure to have you join us this morning as we begin another program and another time of study and praise. And we will begin today with hymn number 348, The Church Has One Foundation. We'll be singing verses 1, 3, and 4. Please join us.
Has one foundation, 'tis Jesus Christ the Lord. She is his new creation by water and the word. From heaven he came and sought her to be his only bride.
Wonderful hope we have that Jesus is always caring for his church. So we have to stay firm in our faith and long for that time when we can be with him for eternity. And as we move on to our next song, I would like to remind you that you can go online to saccentral.org, and there you can share a hymn that you like, a favorite hymn that you would like to sing on an upcoming Sabbath. All you have to do is go to saccentral.org, go to the contact us section, and then click on hymn request, and there you can share where you're writing us from, your name, and what song you would like us to sing. Our next hymn is hymn number 309, I Surrender All. We'll sing verses 1, 2, and 4.
Trust him in his presence. Jesus, I surrender. Now I feel the sacred flame. Oh, the joy of full salvation. Glory, glory to His name.
Prayer is that we surrender all to Jesus. Before we go into our study, I will ask kindly that you please bow your heads as we have a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for your graces throughout the week, for allowing us to be here to meet together and to study your word. We ask that the Holy Spirit guides our study, Lord, and that He transforms us to be more like you. Thank you for always caring for us, for caring for your church, and for speaking to us in the Bible so simply, Lord, that we can understand your plan of salvation and how much you love us. Thank you for all you do for us, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
So again, welcome to Central Study Hour. Glad you are here with us. If you listen to this recording, or if you are watching us online and you would like a copy of this CD or DVD, you can go ahead and give us a call at 916-457-6511, or you can email us, make sure and give us your information, and we would love to be able to send you a copy. And please make sure if you do call in or email that you give the offer number. It is offer C202-517. Today we'll be going over, like what we have on, in our bulletins, we'll be going over lesson number 4, Nations Part 1. Today, the memory verse for this week is found in Daniel chapter 7, verse 14, and it says this: Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. So the title of this lesson is Nations Part 1. And this week, the lesson goes over and talks about the human's attempt to control the planet. Because that's what us humans, that we tend to do. We tend to go ahead and try and do what we can to control the planet. The book of Daniel and Revelations shows that worldly creations want to take what is rightfully God's, right? He's the one that created. He's the one that created the world, created all things, and man thinks that it is his job to go ahead and take over that creation. The book of Revelation also shows that God has a solution for the fallen world. And that's what we're going to be going over today. The world is God's creation. And we as humans, like I said, we feel like this is ours. Doesn't this world feel like it's ours at times? We see leaders and presidents and congressmen and state officials, leaders of different countries, and it feels like it is run by man, which it is. And we live in this divided world, right? The world has been divided. If you take a look at the whole world has been divvied up, right? To different continents, different countries, different states, different cities, different houses, right? If you took a look at all the separation barriers all over the world, from houses all the way out, it's pretty incredible. If you saw all those invisible lines, right? If you go onto Google Maps and you go on to the satellite view, you just see this huge area. But then when you go into different views, you can see all the streets and lines. And we have divided and spread out this world that we have into different nations, different countries. Some countries are right next to other countries and they get along. There's commerce, there's trade, there's good relationships. Others, you'll find where countries right next to each other, they don't get along. They're fighting against one another. They're trying to conquer one another. And you'll find that each different country has allies throughout the planet. Sometimes they're close allies, sometimes they're allies all the way across the world. But this world that God has created has been all divvied up and cut out and blocked out into everybody's own kind of their own throne, their own kingdom, their own nation, right? And so for thousands of years now, humans have gone through this way of self-governing, right? A self-governing of, we are going to make the decisions, we're going to make our laws, and we're going to divide up into countries and then divide it up later and states and all these crazy things that we are doing to self-govern this world. And to me, at my angle and my point of view, it doesn't seem like we're doing a very good job. It just seems like there's so much turmoil, there's so much hatred, there's so much fighting. So it doesn't look like we are doing a very good job with what we are trying to do, which is kind of take over the nations and rule this world. In this lesson, God talks about, or the lesson goes over, and it says that there is an everlasting kingdom that is going to be established. So we have these nations, these kingdoms of the world, and then we have this everlasting kingdom that is to be established. The lesson shows us a verse in Daniel chapter 7, verse 27. It says this: "Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people and the saints of the Most High. And his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him." So this kingdom that God has, this everlasting kingdom, is an everlasting nation. And everlasting means, right, it's not going to start and stop. It's going to continue to go on. And it's not going to be like the nations that we find today, in the world today. It's going to be different. And it's not going to be like a nation that you study in history class, right? When you go to history class, basically, all you're doing is you're studying one nation going over another nation, going over another nation, and one power gets superseded by another power and another power, and that's basically what you're learning about in history classes, all of these nations that are kind of overtaking and going over one another. So this lesson is going to go over man's attempt to have an everlasting kingdom. And then we're going to go over God's attempt and his way of having an everlasting kingdom as well. If you want to turn in your lesson with me, we'll turn to the lesson Sunday, and that is titled Nimrod and Nineveh, right? So it starts off in this lesson, and it talks about how man was created. And when man was created, he was put and placed into this wonderful, beautiful, glorious place called the Garden of Eden. And I'm a plant guy. I love plants. I love nature. I would love to see the Garden of Eden and what it would be like. Right? This is a place where man was able to walk and talk with God, were able to fellowship with one another. They did not have to work. All of life was great. It was full of pleasure. It was full of love, kindness. It was just this wonderful, special place. Until sin got into the picture, right? And we all know this story. Sin got into the picture, And then after sin came in, that place where they were living in the Garden of Eden and with the Tree of Life, that was not a hospitable place for sin. So eventually, God had no choice but to separate the Garden of Eden and the Tree of Life from man. Right? So that place was taken away. After that, mankind had to shift on how they did things. Right? They lived and walked and talked with God. Everything was easy. Everything was nice. And then after sin, we all know that changes. They have to work. They have to sweat. They have to till the ground. They have to plant their own foods. Right? And so Adam and Eve, they thought that one day God was going to bring them back to the garden. That's what it says here in the lesson. That they thought that God was going to eventually, after a while, bring them back into this garden, which in one case we'll figure out in this lesson. One case they're right. It wasn't them, but they are going to be able to be in the garden and part of the Tree of Life here in the future. And it says here that they would bring sacrifices and they would bring gifts to God at the place of the Garden of Eden, right? God didn't take away the Garden of Eden right away. It stayed there for a time. And when that garden stayed there, they just didn't have access to it. So there were gates, there were caution ropes that were around it, right? And they were not able to get in, but that was the place where they knew that God lived. So they would go back to that place and they would offer up the sacrifices and they would pray and they were desiring, right, to be back into that place, back into the Garden of Eden. And they were hoping to be back in that wonderful place one time. But they were outside looking in. They saw all the greatness that was there. The life that they had was a wonderful life, a loving life, and now that the life that they had outside was different. When I was studying this, I started to think about a time in my life where there was one thing that I really loved and cherished and that was great and that got taken away. When I was a little kid, we lived in a street, and right across the street from us was just an open field. And there was a beautiful, huge oak tree. So as 10, 11-year-old kids, what we did was we made a massive three-story tree house up in that tree. And it was wonderful. People would come all over the place just to check out our tree house. And we had a nice ladder going all the way up it. And there was a room over here, a room up top, and then another room up top. It was beautiful and it was wonderful. And as kids, me and my friends, there was like 20 of us, so we would go there. And we would have such a great time in our treehouse. We would be hauling things up and hauling things down. We spent a ton of time in that treehouse. And then one day, we get home from school, and there is that orange do not enter things on the bottom, you know, the little gates that were around there. And we didn't know why, but we didn't want to necessarily cross the line because there was construction going on right next to it. So right next to where that tree was, they were building a firehouse. They were building a fire station. So the fireman said, we can no longer, since this is on the fire station property, we can't have you go up into the treehouse. And they said, but you know what, kids, that is one spectacular treehouse. So all of us kids were just sitting there on the outside looking in, on the outside looking up at our magnificent treehouse, but we couldn't go into it. We ended up cutting a deal with the firefighters that almost any time of day we can go into the firehouse, and we got to have dinner with them and slide down the pole and do all that cool stuff. So it ended up working out, but I just remember just being on the outside looking in. I could just imagine what it would be like to be on the outside of the Garden of Eden and be looking in, desiring, because that's where God was. That's where God walked. That's where he communed with them and was with them, and they made one mistake, and then they could no longer be a part of that. If we read in the lesson midway through, it has a text from Patriarchs and Prophets, and I'll go ahead and read that. It says, the Garden of Eden remained upon the earth long after man had become an outcast from its pleasant paths. Hither came Adam and his sons to worship God. Here they renewed their vows of obedience to that law, the transgression of which had banished them from Eden. When the tide of iniquity overspread the world, the wickedness of the man determined their destruction by a flood of waters. The hand that had planted Eden withdrew it from earth. But in the final restitution, where it shall be a new heaven and a new earth, it is to be restored more glorious and adorned than in the beginning. We see here that God left the Garden of Eden and the tree of life there on earth for a while. But then there was a time that came that God removed the whole garden, removed the tree of life, took it up from the earth and removed it, and it was gone. Because he wanted to use it again. And if we read and study the book of Revelation, we read that God's going to reuse it. I would say he's going to repurpose it, like a lot of people like to do repurposing these days of things. It's not going to be repurposed. He's going to use it again. So God said, I made this one thing. It's perfect. It's wonderful. This is how I desired man to live and desired man to live for eternity. I'm going to just take this up and I'm going to use it again. Right? So it's in storage right now. But God is going to reuse that masterpiece that he created. And ever since the exit from the Garden of Eden, man has strived to make his life easier and simpler. Because man and women, they had to work, they had to live in pain, they had to do all of these things. So now the job of humans that we have today, and we see it, it's to make life easier on us, right? To make things simpler, to make this world a beautiful place. And don't get me wrong, I think we've done a good job of making a lot of things very beautiful. But nothing compares to how God created it in the beginning. So can you imagine what it would be like to live in such a wonderful place and then be kicked out, basically living on the streets? I mean, God still created the rest of the world and the rest of the planet, and it was beautiful at that time, but the garden, that was just something special. I don't know if you've done some traveling. If you go to a lot of different countries or states, they usually have botanical gardens, just places that are just beautiful. I remember last year going to Hawaii and going to their botanical garden. It was beautiful. So you're going there, and then you just turn around, and you come back to Sacramento, and you're just in fields, and it's not as beautiful. So the lesson takes us to read Genesis chapter 10. And at the beginning of Genesis chapter 10, it starts to detail the descendants of Noah, right? After the flood, the descendants of Noah. So he starts to go through that and detail, who was there. And then we come to chapter 5 or verse 5 in Genesis chapter 10. And it says this: from these, the coastland people of the Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their family, into their nations. A little bit down below, Genesis 10:8 says this: Cush begot Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Aleh, in the land of Shinar. And verse 11 says, from the land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Ir, Calath, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah. It was the principal city. So we see here, in this scripture, we see a lot of names that are of some importance to us, right? We hear the name of the city of Babel, right? We all know the story of Babel. We all know the story of the city of Nineveh. and we hear the name of a man named Nimrod, right? And it almost seems that if you just read this really quick, it almost seems that Nimrod was somebody that was close to God, right? It says that he was the Lord's mighty hunter. Well, if you read it, you might think that he is the Lord's mighty hunter. But it says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. So if we really study this, it's saying that he was a mighty hunter, but he put himself before the Lord. And he was basically in rebellion against God himself. It says that he began, right? Nimrod began to be a mighty one, right? If you put a group of people out on an island, say you put 30 people out on an island and they're just staying there, usually what will happen if you have groups of humans and human beings, there's always going to be at least one person that is going to want to become the leader, right? They say rise to the top and be a leader and be a voice for the people. So we see that after the destruction, after the flood, Nimrod's becoming a great one, right? He's becoming a mighty one. And it says in verse 10 that at the beginning of his kingdom, of Nimrod's kingdom, not God's kingdom, was Babel. And we all know the story about Babel, right? And all these people, they came after the flood, and they were in charge after the flood of doing things their way, to creating new nations, new places, new families, new kingdoms their way. It's so surprising that right after an event like the flood, when we're talking about the descendants of Noah, so quickly did God's people change, and they completely just forgot about the flood, forgot about God's destruction, forgot about God's power, and they went right into doing things their way, becoming mighty and trying to build these nations. Let's go ahead and move on into Monday. So if we go into Monday, the title of Monday is Abraham's Call. Right, so we see that in Genesis chapter 10, the human race is starting to divide itself up with families and create these nations, and we have different languages. And right after that, everybody is dividing itself up and becoming their own people, their own nations, that God calls out of this group of people who are doing this, Abraham to become a nation that is different from everybody else. A nation that is not seeking its own power and glory, but is seeking to become a blessing and to bless others by God. So we see this happening there. So we see in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says this. Now the Lord has said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all families of the earth shall be blessed. So we see that God is calling Abraham out of his own family, a family that is doing their thing, that are not necessarily being led by God. He calls them out of this family. And isn't it interesting that some of us have been called out of our families? I have a family who is a wonderful, caring, loving family, but God isn't necessarily in all of the family the number one. And God called me out of that family to now become different, right? To become a different nation, right? And he does that so that we can be blessed and that so that we can bless others, right? God had to create and manufacture at least one nation that was his. Because we see so many nations around the world today and in the Bible, so many nations, but he wanted one that was special. He wanted one that was going to be his, different from all the others, one that reflected the plan that God has for his people. So let's take a look at this this other nation here. We find that in Deuteronomy chapter 5. It says this, Deuteronomy chapter 4, starting with verse 5. It says this, "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore, be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this is a great nation, a wise and understanding people." Verse 7 continues and says, "For what great nation is there that God has so near to it? And as the Lord our God is to us, and for whatever reason we may call upon him, what a great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in the law, which I set before you this day. Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, lest they depart from your heart and all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and to your grandchildren." Right? And we're supposed to teach this. And I love this. It says that this nation that God is calling out of amongst the other nations is to be so near, right? So near to him. On the last paragraph in Monday's lesson, it says this: "This was not a single individual bearing witness in a single community. This was an entire nation that by working together and in cooperation with God could exhibit the glory of his character." Right? It says here that these people are going to be wise and understanding people. That is almost inexistent today. Right? If you look at nations and you look at them and see which ones are wise and understanding, I don't think there's one among us, right? In God's eyes, right? And it's, one can be wise and not understanding at the same time, right? And so they did this by working together by God as their leader. So this nation that God is calling out, he's calling out Abraham to start this nation, but Abraham is not the head. Who is the head? God is the one that is in charge of everything. He is the one that is the ruler and the king of this nation. But if these people, Abraham's people, did not continue as God, as their king, then they wouldn't be these people anymore. They wouldn't be God's people, his great nation. So this nation that God is calling out of these other nations is somebody that is set apart, and they are becoming a great nation, right? That is one of the things that always describes God's people. They are a great nation. So, you know, if we take a look at this, you know, personally, with us as Seventh-day Adventists, you know, do we consider ourselves right now that great nation? Are we all wise and understanding? Do we know the truth, right? And do we obey the truth? you know, just some things to think about, right? When we're looking at this nation that God is creating, this everlasting dominion, this everlasting nation, right? It is always going to be great and wise and understanding. Is that us today? So let's go on and let's move into Tuesday. The title of Tuesday is Given What You Ask For. And this is definitely an interesting one because when God first set up this nation of people, this new foundation that he had, there was not to be a human monarch or a king that was in charge, right? God was supposed to be in charge. God was to rule over this nation, and it was supposed to be his, right? So what happens is, you know, from the time of Abraham all the way it continues, there's this great nation, there's this different nation, you know, called Israel. And there comes a time where they kind of got tired of being different. And they wanted to be a little bit more like the other nations. Very dangerous. So the lesson takes us to 1 Samuel. And I'm going to read from 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 and 5. It said, "Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him," they said, "Hey, Samuel, look, you're old. Your sons do not walk in the ways, in your ways, in the ways of God. Now, make us a king to judge us like all the other nations." That's what they said, right? So Samuel, I think a lot of the people were looking at Samuel as really their leader, and they were not looking at as God as the true leader. So they say, "Please, let's just be like all the other nations. Why do we have to be different?" Right? So can you make that happen for us, Samuel? And Samuel gets upset, and he knows it's not a good idea. He knows that God needs to be the one that is in charge, right? And then in Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 7, it says, "And the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say, in all that they say to you, for they have not neglected you, but they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." So basically God is saying, okay, Samuel, give them what they ask for. But before you give them what they ask for, make it very clear that you are explaining to them exactly what will happen if you turn and you do not want God as the central leader and you want to have a king. Tell them what will happen. And in Samuel chapter 8, it goes ahead and explains. It says that, okay, remember the past kings. There's been past kings. Look at the other nations, right? These kings are going to come and they are going to take your land. They are going to make you go work in the fields. They are going to make you go into battle. They are going to take your women. They're going to take your fields. They're going to take a tenth of what you have. And you are going to regret this. So, and Samuel says all of these things to them. And after all of this, after this explaining of what is going to happen, all of this bad news, the people still in the end say, "Yeah, well, we still want to be like the other nations. Can you please give us another king? Can you give us a king? We don't, you know, that that God that you talk about, Samuel, we don't really see him much. We'd like to see a person. We'd like to see a figure," which is pretty sad. And the lesson asks us in one of the questions, it says, why do we suppose the elders thought this was appealing to them, right? Because these are elders amongst the people of Israel that are coming to Samuel with this idea. And first off, I think that they, you know, it takes a lot to be different, right? If you're different from everybody else in the planet, it can become tiresome at times, right? So I think that they were kind of tired of being different. They were kind of looking that, hey, if we do, yes, God's in charge, but a lot of that burden still stays on us to be able to judge amongst ourselves. They're kind of thinking, you know what, if we have a king, that might kind of lighten our load. It might make things easier for me. Right, so that's how I feel that the elders thought this was appealing, to have another king, you know, to have a person that was there. So their request for a king was really, in all, it was a rejection of God as their king. They wanted to be like everybody else. And, you know, if you go over, you know, the book of Samuel and a lot of the other books of the Bible, it talks about the different kings that come into reign. And usually it says, and this king did evil in the sight of the Lord, which most of them said that, right? If we look at the history in the Bible, a lot of them, when they talk about the other nations, say, and this king did evil in the eyes of the Lord. That means that God was not present, God was not being followed. But there were a few kings that were there that did say that, yes, they did good in the sight of the Lord, right? So Tuesday, at the very bottom, the last sentence, it says this. But then, or back then, or even today, all human governments share one thing in common, right? It says, sinners governing other sinners. What could possibly go wrong, right? And that's what we have today. That's what we have in this world. It's sinners governing other sinners, right? And nothing can go wrong with that. But it's interesting that if you put good people, God-fearing people, in places of power, things can change. I remember I first started working for this company, and we had a night crew, and they loaded all the trucks in the night crew. We'd load 20, 50 trucks in a night. And the leader, you know, if you've worked with night crew people, that's a different breed of people. It's a different type of people that work at night. I can't work at night. But so you usually you don't get the cream of the crop when you have night people. There are some good people there, don't get me wrong. But there was a group of ruffians pretty much working at night, and they were managed by a leader who just was just yelling at everybody. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to change the leader. I can't fire everybody and get a whole new crew in here. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a nice guy. So I ended up finding within the group that was working there, I ended up putting in charge an older man who was genuine, who had a good heart, who cared for people, who loved to train other people and share his expertise in plants and loading trucks. And it completely changed, right? So we're talking about, you know, sinners governing other sinners. But when we put somebody in charge, we can see a transformation. If you put a God-fearing, God-loving man or woman into a leadership role, things can change, right? So if we want to, you know, go away from what could possibly go wrong with sinners leading sinners, well, let's let some of God's people lead the sinners. Maybe we can turn some things around. I know our night crew shirt turned around. Okay, so let's go over into the Wednesday. So the title of Wednesday is The Ruler of the Gentiles. And I'll go ahead and read that first section that we have in the lesson. It says, God's dealing with Israel provide rich insights into his dealings with the New Testament church. In fact, in many ways, the nation of Israel served to foreshadow the errors of the church. Far from being able to claim any kind of superiority to ancient Israel, Christians have been and still are very much susceptible to the same temptations. Right? We have seen Israel in the way they have erred in the past and the mistakes they have made. All of those are things that we can look at, so we don't have to make the same mistakes. But we end up usually following into the same traps and the same circumstances that ancient Israel came up against. So the lesson has us take a look at Matthew chapter 20. And in Matthew chapter 20, I'll go ahead and read verses 25 through 28. It says, "But Jesus called them to himself and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many.'" So we see here that Jesus is warning the disciples about desiring to be great, desiring to become first. And he's saying that, no, to be a follower of me, we need to be humble, right? We need to not want to have this world power and authority, right? Israel, they asked for a human king. And they said, because they wanted a human king here in the flesh to be like all the Gentiles, right? And when they brought a human king into them, into their nation and them amongst the people, it was just a matter of time until the influences of the outside started to infiltrate God's people, right? Because when we want to be like the world and do things the way the world does them, we're going to let little by little the world come in. So then eventually God allowed, right? We're talking about the people of Israel. We're talking that God eventually allowed the Babylonians to come in and take captive to kind of make a course correction, right? God's people were kind of semi-governing themselves. And then there would become a time when God would let that nation be conquered. And it would almost be like a reset, so that God would go ahead and have them be almost slaves and see how bad it is. And then once they came out, hopefully they would do a course correction. But that didn't always happen. Sometimes God tried to press a reset button on his people. And when we talk about, you know, Israel wanting a king, they wanted a king, and then over time as well, we let the world get into the church, and we start to compromise like the church or like the world, right? We let the world influence the way we do things, because we don't want to be too different, right? We want to be like the world, but then not like the world at the same time. And that's a fine line to try and go through. And it's really difficult. If we are too different from the world, then it makes it complicated. It makes hard for people to come in here. Is it hard to have a visitor, a family member that you know, come to church on Sabbath? To me, it is hard, because the whole world goes to church on Sundays, right? Not the whole world, but you know what I'm saying. A lot of people are used to it on Sundays. Saturday is time for soccer games and having parties and doing things. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for us because we want to be like the world so that we can get people to come in, but then we need to show them that we're different at the same time. And what happens is, and the lesson goes over here and touches on a little bit as well, is that in the past, what has happened is we've brought in leaders and we've made compromises in the church, and that leads to government coming in and then trying to give the government say in our worship, when we can worship, who we can worship, what time we can worship. in some of the darkest times in the church's history is when the church and God's everlasting nation have made compromises, right? In Matthew 20, verse 25, it says, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them." The only one that I want lording over me is our Lord. Right? I don't want anybody else over me. Let's go ahead and move on into Thursday, because I think it's gonna be really important that we close on this. And that is a light to the Gentiles. Right? And we're talking about, right, remember the title lesson is Nations, Part One. And a nation that can be a light to the Gentiles. The very first sentence in Thursday's lesson says this: "The primary purpose for which God established the nation of Israel was not to condemn the rest of the world, but to save it." Right? As believers, we are called to reflect his character. Right? We are called to save others. And that is the purpose of God's nation, his everlasting kingdom. Revelation 14:12 says, "Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus." If Israel would have received God how they should have, and they would have reflected God's character, they would have pulled people in to that nation. They would have pulled people in to want to be a part of their kingdom, want to be a part of God and his plan and what he has. This was the plan of God, to be able to have a people that would reflect his character, to follow his rules, and to be able to save others. But God's people didn't want to do that. So what they did was they looked upon other nations. They said, okay, what do they do well? And we want what they do. We want what they have. You know, the United States and other countries, we have a tendency to look around and see what other countries have done well. What are other countries doing well? And then we try and adopt that here in other countries, right? When somebody else is doing something good, you want to kind of adopt that. We want to try and copy it. We want to copy, you know, other diets that are working. We want to copy different ways of living, right? How to live in peaceful areas. And we're looking at what, you know, certain countries in Europe are doing, or, you know, we tend to do that as a nation. And we have, as a nation here in the United States, we have adopted many things. We adopted holidays, Halloween, Christmas, St. Patrick's Day. Originally, those were not of, you know, the United States. Those were all from different countries. We've adopted TV shows. You look at The Office, America's Funniest Home Videos, American Idol, right? These popular TV shows, those have come from other nations. If we look at the food we have here, right? Burritos, tacos, pizzas, hamburgers, those are not American. Those have come all from other areas. And we tend to look at what other people are doing well, and we bring that in, you know, to what we do. And we could have been reflecting God's characters, showing how wonderful it is to be a follower of God, how wonderful it is to follow his commandments, to let him rule over us. We could have, as a nation of God's people, influenced others, but instead we bring in the influence from others to us. And Jesus did a very good job of reflecting God's character. He was healing people. He was saving people. He was bringing multitudes into him. Right? Why don't we do that today? We still do. Don't get me wrong, we still do. But right, we only do that as we are reflecting God's character. There comes a time when the whole world is going to be given light, right? There will come this time. There's a question on the bottom of Thursday's lesson, and it says this: what do the following passages teach us about God's intended role for his people in this world? It takes us to Numbers chapter 14, starting with verse 17. It says, "And now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers of the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people. I pray according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now." Then the Lord said, "I have pardoned according to the world, but truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of God." Right? God wants this earth to be filled with abundant long-suffering, mercy, forgiveness, love, right? Thank you so much for being here with us today at Sacramento Central Seventh-day Adventist Church for a Central Study Hour. If you would like a copy of this lesson, you can go ahead and give us a call at 916-457-6511, or you can email us. Make sure and give us your information, and we would love to be able to send you a copy. And please make sure if you do call in or email that you give the offer number. It is offer C202-517. Thank you for being with us at Central Study Hour for at Sacramento Central Seventh-day Adventist Church.